All right, ladies. Up.
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. In this happy holiday episode, we connect with former U.S. ski team member and coach, and now retired Canadian head coach, Justin Wadsworth. Wadsworth was on his way in the family car to holiday festivities way, way north of Canmore, Alberta. Anyhow, Wadsworth will be providing live Nordic sport commentating for the CBC during the 2018 Olympics. We thought Wadsworth would be a great resource to get a rundown of period one on the cross-country World Cup. First off, here's Wadsworth telling us what he's been up to besides learning how to operate in a television studio.
No, I'm working with First Nations youth here in Canada now, as long and as well as coaching 56, 10, and 11-year-olds. And I'll be commentating, yeah, for CBC during the Olympics, so that's about it.
With the First Nations group, what are you specifically doing?
Well, I've been, we built a ski trail. I helped this school. It's about an hour away from Canmore. It's in, it's called Sutina, which is T-S-U-U-T-apostrophe-I-N-A. So it's on the Sutina Reserve. It's the Sutina High School. And we've built a ski trail by hand this fall. And then now we're bringing the ski program to the school. And they bought skis this year. And so I'll be going out there and working with the kids and getting them skiing. So they'll have their own ski trail that's groomed as well as a ski program. So that's one thing. And then I have a group that I worked with last year from the Morley Reserve. And we call that the Nakota Nordic Ski Team. And they come out once a week, and this is the second year with the same group of kids. And we do a race at the end of the year, and it's just great. The kids have really been excited about the program and consistently coming, so that's been a real success.
Oh, cool. That's good. Good for you, and good for them. Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, it's been a great success all around.
Okay, so let's start with the women's side, and for everyone on the World Cup in period one, looks like there were 10 races overall. Six of those are considered distance races and four sprint. And I guess I'll just ask straight up, anything that kind of caught your eye in terms of new dynamics on the women's side this year?
Yeah, for sure. The racing has been different with the absence of Johaug. I mean, I know she was, you know, absent before a little bit, but I think it's kind of opened up the women's field a bit. They, you know, the races, especially the mass starts, ski differently without, you know, the pace of one person just like driving it from the front. And so that's created a different dynamic and allowed more opportunity for the Parmakowskis, the Diggins, the Wang. Well, you know, Wang's always been a front runner, but maybe the Hagas. So you start to see some of the skiers that have, you know, been in there for sure, but I think they've sensed a bit more of an opportunity. And you know, Marit Bjørgen's armor has definitely been chinked enough now where people don't give her as much respect, which really changes the dynamic of the race. You know, we've seen it on the men's side with people like Northug and Sundby. And now Claybull, like when you get someone that garners so much respect, it definitely influences the rest of the group in the field. But on the women's side now, you know, there's not one clear, you know, person that has that. And I think that definitely gives more of a sense of opportunity. And, you know, confidence is everything in racing. So if there's that opportunity, that confidence, yeah, that to me has been a theme this year on the women's side.
Since you brought up Bjørgen, and I want you to kind of speak from your depth of experience in that it is an Olympic year. And specifically, you know, Mara obviously is a mother, but that said, she came off last year at World Championships. She was, off the top of my head, something like 5 medal. I mean, I think she won every distance race. So, you know, is this a function of there's a chink in her armor or a calculated, I'm just not going to really put in the major efforts until mid-February?
No, I mean, for me, Jason, you know, she's a classic. She's solid, but skating, she's definitely, like, she's not the best skater. We've seen on the skating races this year, we haven't seen her winning, I don't believe. And I don't even think she's been in the top on the podium in the skate race. Do you want to correct me on that?
I'm looking right here. You are right. So she has won. Let's see. I'm looking at the distance overall.
She just won the pursuit. She won the second day of the pursuit in Toblach.
She won the Interval Start Classic, the first race of the season in Ruka. And she bookended that by winning the last distance race of period one, which was, Pursuit Classic. Yeah, exactly.
Toblach Pursuit. Yeah. So really, you know, I think she's showing that she's the strongest in Classic, but that's about it. And I think in the skating side, you know, we've seen Kala, we've seen, you know, Tarmakoski, Diggins. Like, there's more of an open field, I think, on the skating side. And, you know, with the skiathlon at the Olympics, you know, ending with skating, I think that race for her is a bit of a, you know, she maybe not is the favorite. And then the women's 10K skate, which will be at the Olympics. So really only at the Olympics, the 30K for women. And sprinting, I don't think she's really the strongest. Even though it's a classic sprint, I don't think she's the strongest. So really for her, for Olympics, it's, you know, as far as winning goes, I don't think we're going to see her dominate. I mean, you can never say she's one of the greatest women of all time. But anyways, my feeling is that the other women in the field feel like, especially sprinting, you know, Marit used to be so dominant and in everything, you know, skating, distance, classic, distance, you know, skate, whatever. But now it's really only distance classic where she's shown that she's still the really formidable old self.
You know, there's been, you know, still thinking of the distance side, there's been a host of winners this year, you know, so Kala has won two events. Bjorgen has won two events. Haga has won one, and Osberg has won another one. So yeah, like you were saying, the riches have been spread out a bit. Are you surprised at all to have seen Kala perform the way she has?
A little bit, you know. I feel like she's kind of a big year skier. She comes to the big seasons and kind of raises their game. You know, like a lot of Swedes in the past, she finds that. I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's a little. I mean, she's been better than I would have expected overall this year. I think a weakness still, though, we saw it in Toblach, is a bit of classic. So if she, you know, I think going in the Olympics, though, it's a really good Olympic schedule for her, especially with the 10K skate. I mean, that's going to be one of the most exciting races. I think both on the men's and women's side, that individual skate race is going to be, normally those individual races at the Olympics aren't the most exciting, but I think there's so many people that could win on either side. From Andrew Musgrave on the men's side, I think he's a dark horse to win that race, to, you know, Diggins. And Sadie's been skating well this year. And so it's really, I think those individual races could be more of the interesting races during the games.
I guess, what are your thoughts about the U.S. women in particular? You know, I think historically, Jessie Diggins has podiumed, I think, at least two times at the Tour de Ski. Maybe in Toblach, actually.
Yeah, she's been great in Toblach, yeah.
Yeah, and so she's had 2/10, a 5th, a 15th, and 2/7 in the distance races. You know, anything about what you're seeing, at least, you know, Jessie, Sadie Bjornsson, Rosie Brennan, or Keegan Randall, obviously, that caught your eye in terms of, like, I'm expecting more or expecting less, or this is about where they should be this time of year?
I think they're right on track. The U.S. women's team has looked amazing. I mean, take a look at Ida Sargent making her first final. You know, that was in having a great qualification. Like, it wasn't just like she snuck in and qualifying and then, you know, got lucky through the rounds. Like, she skied very strong in Davos through the heat and in qualifying. So that, I mean, and Rosie Brennan has had some, I would say, some of her best results. And like I said, Bjornsson has been, you know, better, more solid in skating. Jesse's been more solid in classic. It feels like they've really done their homework to be more well-rounded this year. You know, they've each had their specialties in the past. Like, Sadie Bjornsson's been, you know, amazing in short classic races, or, you know, but now she can skate, and same with Jesse. Jesse's been great in skating, but now she can, it looks like she can really hang in classic as well. So to me, it's the whole team has been really, really well-rounded, and I feel like they've really set themselves up for a great Olympics, and not just putting all that weight on Keegan or on Jesse. Like, I really feel like, yeah, there's a number of athletes that can perform now at the games. And that's good for the whole team, because that will take the, it puts pressure on the team, but it doesn't put it on one individual.
Let's hop over to the sprint side of things for the women. So Stina Nielsen from Sweden leads the sprint standings with two wins and a fifth place. Falla from Norway is second in the sprint standings with a win and a second place, but she did not contest the sprint in Ruka. And then just going down the line, you've got Sadie Bjornsson in fourth, Sophie Caldwell in sixth, Jesse Diggins in seventh, Keegan Randall in 10th, and Ida Sargent in 13th. And I hope I'm not sounding like super nationalistic here, but we are based in the U.S. So
I think on the women's side, you can safely say, besides, you know, outside an individual winning, they have the strongest women's sprint team. I mean, they have been so solid in qualifying. They've been solid through the rounds. They've placed, you know, three women in the finals. Like, it's this is stuff now that, you know, I just know in the wax truck that they have with the team spirit, that they're disappointed if they don't, you know, put two or three in a final. And when you get to that kind of confidence and that level of, like, just believing in your racing ability as a team, it's really hard to stop that momentum. And I know that all the other teams consider the U.S. women a major threat.
And correct me if this is not making sense, or just redirect me. But, you know, back when you were coaching the Canadian national team, you had a super strong, you know, Devin was second overall at one point. Obviously, there's Alex. What do you say, you know, if you were, can take what you had said to the Canadian guys, and hypothetically, what would you say to this group of U.S. women? You know, it's early season. And obviously, in the non-Scandinavian nations, we seem to place less of an emphasis on regular World Cups and glorify the Olympics. That said, what do you say to a group of high-achieving athletes to kind of keep perspective for like a 2.5 month period, rather than just like weekend after weekend and a little more short-sighted vision?
So, you know, just keep doing the things you're doing because it's working. And there's no magic to it, and there's no magic at the Olympics. They're just other races. And going into the games, feeling confident that actually, as U.S. athletes and North American athletes, you have an advantage for traveling. You travel better overseas because you do it all the time. I really believe that having an Olympics in a place like Korea is not a home field advantage, but it takes away the advantage of Europeans having the travel, easy travel to home and whatnot. So just keep doing what you're doing. I would also say, though, you know, a lot of these countries have very hard selection early in the season. And for the U.S. again to be doing as well as they're doing early in the season, I think that and not peaking. I know they're not peaking right now. They've, you know, not like some of the other say Norway, you know, early selection races, they race in Beitostølen so hard, you know, and there's so much pressure to perform, and it, everything's got to be there every weekend. Otherwise, you might not go to the Olympics, even if you're a top five World Cup skier. So I would just say for the U.S. team, like, keep doing what you're doing. Take the confidence with you. Know you're amazing at traveling around the world, and just that's your opportunity. And I think that's, you know, what I've in situations where we've had like that in the past as Canadians going into World Cup finals or whatever it's been, we've, you know, tried to relay that kind of same idea.
On the guys' side, who would you say is leading the distance overall?
Clabo.
Yeah, it's actually Magnificat.
Oh, that's right. Which, he had the yellow bib and toe block. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I me too. And I was like, oh man, look at that. So
that's because he won in Davos and Clabo sat out, and that's 100 points right there. And where Clabo lost some more points though was in the first day in toe block, the first part of the pursuit. Clabo was down in like 10th place that day. And then he didn't race in Davos. Those were the only places he lost where he hasn't won.
Okay, so on the guys' side, no big news here, but thoughts about kind of the changing dynamic for the guys?
Well, I mean, I think the most, you know, obviously Clabo winning pretty much everything he gets in. But beyond that, I mean, I think that's really what has been interesting is to see Sundby. You know, here's someone that I think his confidence has been a bit shattered. And when you're dealing with it, you know, we all, you know, from North America watch ski racing, blah, blah, blah. But in Norway, I mean, it is the show, and he was the man, and now he is not the man, and he's getting handily beaten, and there's something going on there. And I think that in itself is a story. Will, you know, Sundby be able to bounce back and show us his real, you know, domination? And maybe it's the fact that, you know, we don't see as much double pulling going on in classic races, because for sure he was extremely strong there. But you know, there's something going on there, and so that's an interesting story to follow. Just you know, when's the last time we've seen Sundby just get shelled like he was in toe block? I mean, that was, you know, amazing. And then, you know, he definitely scrapped his way back kind of into top 10, I think. But so that's been interesting. But, yeah, I think Alex, the men's racing has been a little bit more stable than the women's racing. And in general, there's been some great races besides, you know, Clabo does keep it interesting. I mean, every now and again, it blows it open. But he likes to wait and make a strong surge. So it's not for uninteresting racing, even though he's won everything. Not like we've seen in the past from Johaug, where, you know, 5 minutes into a race, you want to turn it off because you know she's going to win.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, did you, I'm assuming it sounds like you watched every race, the Skiathlon in Lillehammer?
Yep.
Yeah. When, I mean, I thought, I was like.
Yeah, there was one where like, oh, Sundby's back. You know, good for him. He made a big pull on the big climb, but then Clabo just reeled him in. Like, you know, I think that was one of the most amazing comebacks with a K to go in a race I've ever seen.
You know, from your experience, you know, in the sport, and obviously in every sport, you know, there comes a time when the king or queen, you know, they're done. And sometimes it's not a soft fade, you know, it's something that's really abrupt, perhaps like we're seeing with Sundby. But if, you know, when you're like, yeah, something's up, you know, historically from your perspective, is that just like you get old and you lose the firepower coupled with the confidence or lack of confidence? Or
yeah, I mean, first it goes back. I mean, it's so impressive for a young guy like Clabo. Maybe he just didn't, you know, have the respect that he should have for Sundby and broke that kind of ceiling there, that glass ceiling of Sundby being so dominant. But, yeah, I think, you know, maybe a year older Sundby and a lot of stress with his, you know, asthma stuff that had happened in the past. And, yeah, there's a lot of, I think a lot of factors involved, but, once that, I think once that, like I said, that chink of armor that seems to be there for certain athletes and respect in the field, once that gets, you know, taken away or dented or nicked or whatever you want to say, it gives everyone else that little bit of more confidence that, look, we can, this guy is beatable. And that's, again, that just opens the floodgates, I feel like. And now, you know, Claypool is wearing that. And, you know, he's never probably been in that position going into Olympic Games. And I think the amount of pressure he'll be under will be interesting so far. I mean, he's been there and he's shown up on the big days and performed, but the Olympics are next level, especially when you're a Norwegian. So that'll be a really, you know, and he hasn't raced in Korea. Like, most of the top distance athletes haven't been racing in Korea. So we don't know, you know, if the course suits somebody or not. With that long finish, it leaves a little bit more open to other skiers that can come back a little bit towards the finish line. We've seen that in some of the early World Cups that they had there. Lenny was way out in one race, in the sprint race, and almost came back to get on the podium. I mean, he was way off the back on the big sprint climb. And so I think it's the kind of course that could be, I really like the design. I think it's gonna make for some very exciting racing there with the way the finish is.
And, you know, Alex Harvey has been super consistent. You know, if you're watching the races, he's often been in the front in the distance events. Is this a fairly typical course for Alex, you know, early season warming up, he's got a couple fourth places, no podiums yet, but he seems pretty, you know, in interviews and pretty chill at this point.
Yeah, I think Alex is in absolute perfect position. He looks very confident when he's racing. He looks, you know, within himself. He doesn't look like he has that next gear, which he'll normally attain, you know, later. Like, I've seen him in some of the sprints, and he just doesn't look like he has that top end speed. But I know that, you know, that's something that he wants to wait a little bit on to have when the going gets really, you know, for the big hardware at the Olympics. This Olympics for Alex is something he's been waiting for. I think, you know, going into Sochi, he was prepared for medals, and I think physically he was ready there. And this time around, though, and since he came away empty-handed there and disappointed, he's just going to be like a caged animal, and it's going to be very exciting to watch him race.
Okay, so last on the guys' side, just to bring up a couple of the Russians that have not so far been implicated with the Sochi, you know, doping. So Ustigov, who had a pretty stellar world championships last year in Lahti, and then Bolshinov is second on the sprint list, 12th on the distance list, and then third overall. And he comes to the World Cup having, it sounds like, I think, won several U23 titles. So he's sort of maybe new to the World Cup, but he's a force, kind of like Claybo. You know, any thoughts about the Russians?
I'm not going to talk about the Russians until they admit to their state-sponsored activities. It's not allegations. There's hard evidence. The IOC wouldn't have done what they've done unless there was hard evidence, that's for sure. And when I watch the ski race now, I see a Russian in it. I don't even, it's like they're not there. I just don't pay attention. I don't care about them. And I want them to, as soon as they're willing to come clean and admit to what they've done, then we can start to talk about their current state of affairs.
So can I ask another question about that? I didn't even mean to kind of get into any of that, but this I think is a legit question would be, so how do you navigate that when you're commentating for the CBC for the Olympics?
I would just tell the facts as I know them now. And that's, there's three different reports. There's the McLaren report, the Oswald report, and the Schmidt report from the IOC. all three reports have hard facts and evidence that shows a state-sponsored Russian doping system. So when we know that, that's the facts. That's not allegations. And I plan to bring that up as the factual base for my commentating, and then say, you know, we'll see at the Olympics how many athletes the IOC lets in based on what they call, you know, their clean athletes from Russia. Once we determine that, then I'll have a better idea what I'm going to say about each of those athletes. But at the current stage, I don't believe that just because you're a quote-unquote clean athlete from Russia that you are a clean athlete from Russia. We know that if you're just taking test results, you know, Lance Armstrong never failed a doping test. Most of these Russians haven't failed doping tests. That doesn't mean you're a clean athlete just because you passed every FIS dope test. So I think it's more the answer is in the system. And I just think the public needs to be educated that the facts are the facts. They're legal facts from these reports, and that they show there's a systematic doping, you know, from the Russians that have involved a lot of cross-country skiers.
Let me ask one last question on this. What are your thoughts about FIS allowing these skiers who, you know, from my understanding, again, I am not privy to the data pool, but so far have not been associated with the doping at the Sochi Games, kind of like Ustugov or Bolshinov. Do you think FIS should take a stronger stance and perhaps suspend those athletes until we get a better picture of what systematic doping was actually like in Russia beyond Sochi?
I think that would be a good start. I mean, I have to state I don't have any personal bias against Russia. I don't want to see truly clean athletes banned from anything. But, you know, it's the system, and they've had a system, and a system means that everybody's involved. And until you can prove otherwise, then you have to sit out. And they're not even willing at this point to admit that they've had a system. So unfortunately, clean athletes or whatever athletes from Russia are the ones that pay the price. And they're the ones that should be upset and going back against their own system and their government and saying, like, come clean so we can reset and really show the world that, you know, we can be great skiers.
Anything else?
No, I think overall, though, the cross country World Cup is the races are interesting. I think it's been a healthy start. Lots of different people winning and on the podium, and I'm really looking forward to watching the Olympics on CBC.
Did they give you, I mean, you sound pretty pro, but have they given you any like media training yet?
Yeah, we were just in Toronto about a week and a half ago for 4 days of a kind of a seminar and then some in studio work. And so it was really nice to have that time. And I'm just trying to learn from Becky, who's done it a lot before. We had some studio time where myself and Becky and Nigel Reed, who's going to be our play-by-play analyst, we had some really good practice, and it's going to be fun to call the races live in studio in the middle of the night in Canada.
How do you look on camera?
Yeah. We'll see about that, but
do they say like it adds weight or takes weight away? TV, I forget.
I think it adds weight.
Okay. All right.
That shouldn't be a problem for me. I'll take a few extra pounds.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your time, Justin, and have a good holiday.
Yeah, have a good holiday. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for listening to Nordic Nation, and happy holidays.